This is Fanboy versus Transformers with Brian Kilby, Rob Clay, Diecast, and Chris Triplett.
This is Fanboy versus Transformers, and this week we are talking about Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 7. I am Brian Kilby. With me, we have Rob Clay. Rob.
Hi.
Diecast.
Hello.
And the indomitable Chris Triplett.
Howdy.
So, let's get started. It was all a terrible, terrible dream. But wait, no, it wasn't. The last issue of Transformers vs. G.I. Joe left us with the idea that everything we've read thus far had been a dream imagined by Scarlet. And the thing is, I know it's not. It was all explained in this beautiful and crazy homage to my childhood, but it still could have been a dream, maybe? Because, you know, Transformers vs. G.I. Joe? I have to say, first and foremost, Transformers vs. G.I. Joe number 7 is my favorite issue of the series thus far, because it is a beautiful and crazy homage to things that I love.
Mm-hmm.
Like the framing of it, the panels, like Dark Knight Returns, from that to Springfield, to the title of this issue is beautifully illustrated on the last page, and it's Headmasters. I love this book.
Mm-hmm.
So, is it worthwhile actually trying to talk through the issue as to what happens? Because it's a Transformers versus G.I. Joe book, but I guess we should. So, in issue number 6, the last episode of this we did in respect to Transformers versus G.I. Joe, on the last page, it turned out that everything was a dream, or it could have been a dream, or was heavily implied that it was a dream, and we actually didn't really know where that was going to go.
A dream that Scarlet was having.
A dream that Scarlet was having.
But I guess totally wrong, because I expected from the commentary in the back of the book about how, you know, Skeely hates it was all a dream ending, so this was just basically a one-off to get everybody to shut up about it so they could move on. And then we get this.
I'm so glad it wasn't a one-off.
I know.
Yeah, so basically, Scarlet has been subjected to Dr. Mindbender's, dream machine? What did he call it?
Brainwave scanner, or yes. I like to think of it as dream machine.
Yes. and it's basically induced this false set of memories, or so she thinks it's a false, she's being told it's a false set of memories, that she is a G.I. Joe ninja, but instead she's actually a housewife and mother in, was the city named? It wasn't Springfield, but
it is Springfield.
It is Springfield.
It is named.
Oh my god, that is so awesome! Okay, I missed that. I read the issue twice and I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I didn't see that it was named.
It's on the police cars, if nowhere else. But I know the name Springfield does come up in the book.
I love that so much. So
yeah, it says Springfield PD because I'm looking at the page right now.
That is so great. Okay, so she's living this life as a mother and housewife. And it's she's having a hard time dealing with it. So she is going, I guess, reading an issue of Transformers versus G.I. Joe sometimes requires that you peel off a bunch of layers. And then what you find underneath, you might still misinterpret. So I'm probably going to misinterpret part of this. But so she's going through this. She's being induced in the dream, in the brainwave scanner on the first page. And a lot of this, she's told that she actually sees the facility where all this is happening, and she's basically being told that it's like a research center or a lab, and that things like Bumblebee's head are just a project, or these replicant children are like, it's almost like they tip their hand that they're not they're you know, almost human. Like sometimes, like Rob said in last episode, the book really sort of focuses on the page more so than the overall story sometimes. And I think this first page or second page really just tries to be creepy and weird more so than really drive the story along. But I don't care. Yeah. It's amazing. let's see here. So, so she's being subjected to all of this stuff.
She's being told that, like, the Transformers and G.I. Joe were, like, this show or these toys that she identified with when she was younger, right?
Yeah, and they even have, like, an alternate history of what the Transformers are and Cybertron. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm. I think they were trying to convince her that she was crazy and that who she thought she was, she actually wasn't. She was just a regular housewife with two kids and a wife, and that's what they were trying to coax her into thinking and brainwash her into thinking. And that's not what happens.
Yes, luckily through the magic of meeting Billy and his ninja telepathy, she is able to figure out what is going on and where she is and tell Dr. Mindbender exactly what he wants to hear.
Oh my god, so like the panel where she says, and I've always had a problem saying this, but Arashikage. Uh-huh. Dr. Mindbender's like, Gesundheit.
Yes.
I love that.
I like that on the screens behind the Bumblebee head that's supposed to be an experiment because it's based off of something I really liked when I was a kid and all this stuff. You've got like Optimus saying, "Hold tight, Bumblebee, I'm on my way." And Bumblebee saying, "Optimus can't defeat Scorponok alone." That's basically what's going on in the real world,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Like, that's exactly what's so going
on. It's like the real world is like trying to get through to her, but it's getting mixed up because of the dream machine. It's like pieces of it are coming through, but it's coming through as a part of the dream.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So after this this section, it goes to Dr. Mindbender's office. And again, I love Dr. Mindbender, and I love his the way they use him in this issue. Yeah. And she's going through the psychotherapy, and it's where he's basically, you know, trying to reinforce that G.I. Joe is a cartoon, Cybertron is this, you know, this nonsense word and everything. And then it introduces her family, her husband and two kids. And she has to basically try to live the life of a housewife. And this is a very Frank Miller page. Goes to where she's basically – it's like this grocery store is her idea of hell. And she's like thinking about it and the demons that possess this hell speak to her. It's crazy and wonderful.
And, of course, the ghosts of Nebulos.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that before we move too far ahead, that the toy line that she really loved was made by three executives named Cy, Bert, and Ron.
Yeah. 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 So it's great. It's great. It's great. I freaking love this. And of course, it sort of skips around a little bit. It skips to a panel where she's speaking with a dog who ends up being Junkyard. And she's telling the dog that he's the only one that she can trust and that she needs his help. And she says, "Dogs make great agents. They're universally welcomed, able to cross borders with ease. Nobody suspects a dog."
Are we to assume in some way that maybe like the stuff is not affecting animals, it's just affecting the Joes, like the people or something? Is that what we're to assume?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, in this Springfield, instead of just having like a robot dog, because they can make robot dogs, or just a random dog, they actually have Junkyard.
Yeah. Because they captured all of them, didn't they? Like all of the Joes are somewhere in that Springfield town at some point, right? Maybe not all of them, but
There's a bunch of them.
There's a bunch of them, yeah.
Which we find out later. So basically she's going back to her mundane domestic life, and she ends up shaving her head because she's, you know, going crazy, and she wants to commit suicide, but her hand is stayed. And I guess one thing I didn't necessarily get, there's like this 3D CGI-ish sort of head. I'm assuming, is that General Hawk? What is that supposed to be? It's kind of like General Hawk.
I think it's General Flag, and she is not trying to commit suicide here.
She's trying to make contact.
She is active. Yeah, she is activating the implant in her head that lets her communicate with General Flag.
Yeah, she's virtual reality General Flag.
Yeah. She short circuited it or something, right? She picked open the scab and.
I'm almost certain that what is she did was jumpstart the chip that lets her communicate with.
Yeah, it says you took your time jumpstarting your subspace transmitter scars. Almost had me worried. Doomsday clock's a ticking. Have you located your team yet?
Okay, yeah, so, interpreting this stuff is sometimes hard. So looking at it, I thought that what that was some sort of control chip or something that had been inserted into her head, and she was so depressed that she almost ended it all, and then somehow this virtual general popped up, and it's sometimes really hard to follow.
Your version might have been even better.
In her talk with General Flag, he makes it clear that the longer she's there, the harder it is to hold on to whatever is left of her sanity. But the thing to understand about all of this, as far as I can tell, is that for the most part, Scarlet is still in control. Since she has talked to Billy, she has been in control, telling everyone exactly what they need to hear and keeping quiet until she can figure out what to do about this.
Yeah, so,
and something I want to call attention to before we move on is, you know, if you did not get the Frank Miller reference before this page, that panel of Scarlet shaving her head, that is such a Frank Miller face. The big eyes, the big lips, the suggestion of the nose due to nostrils.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is a Frank Miller face.
Going back real quick to General Flag, like, I assumed at this point she's crazy and that's in her head. Not, she's not in communication, because I mean, I see what you're saying now as far as it being like a communicator chip, but like the face is distorted. It doesn't look human. I thought she was crazy. So I read this issue twice with the context that she was crazy. And now that I know that she's not, I don't know that I like it as much.
Yeah, no, I didn't see it as she was crazy. I saw it as she knew if she didn't do something now, she was going to keep going to those brainwashing sessions, and eventually she was going to lose her grip on what she actually thought was reality.
Yeah, I figured that she knew that this was all happening and she was just playing along. That's what I always got from when I was reading it. And when she like actually does that and makes contact with him, she even says, you know, I'm going to need more time to revise the mission. There's a whole operation here. They're working on something big, something scary. And she even says we might not get another opportunity like this. It could take years getting an agent placed exactly where I am. So she's like wanting to stay there to do, you know, to basically find out what they're doing, even though she's going to take a risk that, yeah, she might go crazier or get mind washed.
And okay. Flag was like, no, we got to get you out of there. Pretty much.
So, a couple of pages away, I'll go back and explain further why I think she was crazy and why I actually honestly think she still could be. So the next page, because I don't know what to think when it comes to G.I. Joe, Transformers versus G.I. Joe sometimes. Yeah. So a party was thrown in her honor to welcome her home. And at that party, there's a bunch of other G.I. Joes there, because of course you want to put all the Joes together in case they, you know, want to wake each other up and everything.
Well, that's the test.
Yeah.
That's to see if this is going to stick or if you're going to have to do something more drastic.
And it seems like they're totally under control because they don't seem like
they
know what's going on, but, you know, Scarlet knows totally what's going on.
Yeah, they are. Mindbender says as much later in the issue.
Like Mutt. Yeah, Mutt was totally...
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so she has a conversation with Mutt. She tries to speak to him to jog his memory. He doesn't remember anything about G.I. Joe. And he sort of, you know, leaves. At the very least, it implants sort of a seed into his brain. And he leaves the party. And I love how this page is framed. It's basically framed as a comic strip.
Yeah.
And it's a little story about Mutt and Junkyard, who I love. And Mutt's walking home. Junkyard follows him. And he's trying to get his attention. So Mutt wax him with a copy of Transformers versus G.I. Joe.
Number seven.
Yeah, originally reading it, I didn't catch that it was a comic crumpled up. I thought it was a stick. Yeah. I thought, like, oh man, that's harsh.
It's the Ultra Magnus cover. Too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But of course, Junkyard jumps him and licks him, and in a really beautiful panel in this comic, Mutt had been wearing like a dinner jacket or a jacket and pants, but after he's licked by Junkyard, it just shows him wearing his G.I. Joe gear.
Holding Junkyard as a puppy.
As a puppy.
It looks like Junkyard as a puppy.
Yeah, that was his memory coming back of Junkyard, because, I mean, for a lot of people, I mean, that's what their animals are like, you know, that anything would snap you out of being brainwashed, it would be, you know, your own pet.
Yeah. They just squeeze a lot into those couple panels.
Yeah.
So, moving ahead, this is the page where I honestly still think she's crazy. Like, even after the rationale that we've talked about, I honest to God think that she's crazy. She's a ninja, of course, so she has these nerves of steel that she, you know, can kill if she needs to. But the fact that, basically what happens, her husband's asleep watching TV, so she walks up behind him and puts her arm around his neck, and he thinks that she's there to, you know, give him a hug or something. But instead, she slashes his throat.
Yeah.
In this beautiful way where the top two panels are slightly off skew and the bottom two panels are off skew in the opposite direction, sort of to imply that they're coming apart. And there's this great red,
like,
slash
of red.
Of blood. Separating the two.
Yeah.
And if that wasn't enough, she is her kids come up running up to her, and they're like, "Mommy." And this one word bubble kind of, I don't know, this bubble that she says just really, I don't know, I think she's crazy as shit.
That should have told you that. I mean, she probably is a little crazy, because you got to think of the situation. It's going to make you crazy, but
of course.
But I think she does at this point. You know, definitely knows that there's something going on here. If I ever have real kids, I hope they're as good as you two.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't think she was crazy.
Doesn't think they're children. Yeah. She knows that they're things.
Okay.
She saw them. She saw the kids at the beginning of the issue. That establishes that. You know. It establishes it just subtly enough that this scene still stays extremely disturbing, which is what he wanted.
You flip it 180 degrees.
Uh-huh.
If she's insane, she's killing her real kids. So, basically, she burns down the house with the kids in them. On the off chance that she's wrong, she just murdered her kids.
And her husband.
She knows she's not wrong.
She knows she's not wrong.
But, crazy people know that they're right.
I think I see what you're getting. I think, Brian, you're getting at this is that Batman episode with, you know, he thinks he's got a regular normal life, but it's all a dream, and he's going to take a chance. He's going to do something crazy in that too. I think that's what
I mean.
It
like
is.
Like as a reader, I know that Scarlet is Scarlet.
Yeah,
but I'm just putting myself in the story.
And it could be, and we don't really, you know probably everything that's going through her head. Maybe she does think to a degree that this is real and that maybe I am taking a chance. But I think that she knows that enough things are off. She knows that enough things are wrong.
She has a cold-blooded resolve to get out of here. But on the same token, though, again, just putting myself in the story, if she's wrong, she has just lost everything.
Yeah.
And crazy people do stuff like this. Just saying. But so she leaves the house, and she's encountered by Mutt, who in a very Avengers 2 – was it Iron Man 2? Which one was it where they
– You're talking about Winter Soldier?
Captain America, Winter Soldier.
With the whole Hail Hydra?
Hail Hydra, yeah. He just whispers in her ear, Yo, Joe.
Yo, Joe. And then after some nice, very slow, deliberate, Frank Miller-esque panels, we go to a two-page splash of the G.I. Joe team with, you know, the kind of image we would have seen in any other issue of this comic.
Yeah, exactly. And they are Autobots and G.I. Joe have teamed up. Actually, Transformers. The Autobots are still not awake, apparently.
They don't, I guess, realize they're alive or something. I guess it even worked on them too, didn't it? Because I think he even makes a comment. You know, they're not. It's like wake up, for Inferno or something is what he says, right?
Yeah. They're fleeing Springfield, and once they exit Springfield, they find that they have exited Scorponok.
I love that.
Yeah, yes. I thought that was good too.
Springfield is in the center of Scorponok. That is awesome.
And Optimus Prime is facing down Scorponok with his lightsaber.
Yes. And that goes back to, like, you know, the screens, you know, or and
yes.
their dreams. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what he's doing. He's facing down Scorponok with a, you know, headless Bumblebee strapped to his back.
And in a very tiny panel that I'm betting a lot of people will have missed on the first reading, Dr. Venom bolts.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah. He says, "Welcome home, Optimus. Die with your kin." And
yes.
he jumps out.
Yes.
That's great.
So, skipping ahead, Scarlet has made her way, the insane Scarlet, potentially, has made her way back to the lab, and she's approaching Dr. B, who I'm going to say is Dr. Biggles-Jones, but that's left up to interpretation. Sorry, I just want to read this line because I love this book, even though yeah. even when it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Who's there? Is there somebody in here with me? And Bumblebee, his head says, "The most dangerous thing in the world, Ninja Holiday."
That's awesome.
And Scarlet tries to give her a sword. Doctor's like, "Nuh-uh." It's like, I just wanted to play with cool equipment and robots.
Non-combatant scientist, go away.
Yeah, and Scarlet said, "Okay, that was the smartest thing you could have done, was rejecting the weapon. That I know that you're not a threat. Basically, I don't have to kill you."
Mm-hmm.
So then she goes to Dr. Mindbender's office, and yeah. I just love it so much. He's just sitting there, and she's got her bow and arrow, and then he just pulls out a machine gun, which I don't know why. That's just awesome, the thought of Dr. Mindbender sitting at his desk with a machine gun yeah. at arm's reach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I love that he's like, "There's nothing fake here, no ruse. I truly do care. I want only health and happiness for you. I take my oath seriously. We are all people of honor." And he shoots her.
Yeah.
Shoots at her.
I love
that. Well, because if the treatment's not working, she must die.
Yeah.
That's what I saw. I was like, well, you know, your treatment's not going to work, and you've caused a bunch of problems, and now you can't live in a happy, blissful, fake reality.
Mm-hmm.
So she disarms him. He runs. As she's going after him, the robotic under skin, the robot.
Yeah, she burnt the house down with them in it.
Yeah,
so,
the robot form of her children basically attack her, and that's creepy as hell.
Yeah,
that she was right too, because if they were her real children, they wouldn't turn into robots and attack her.
So what I want to know is, like, was her husband a robot because he bled a lot? I assume that was, like, a Cobra agent, and she murdered the hell out of him is what I'm assuming.
That's the only option that I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, again, if she's crazy, you know, she'd imagine robot kids attacking her. Just saying.
She's crazy, then Data misspoke the code that shows up on the Enterprise's screen, and the whole last four seasons of Next Generation take place in his head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So basically, it goes on. Dr. Mindbender professes that Scarlet was an anomaly, and Dr. Mindbender wanted to keep her under observation, I guess because she interested him.
Did you notice how huge that speech bubble was when she, like, cuts Mindbender's glasses in half, and he basically, it seems like he talks forever.
It's like something from a Chris Claremont comic.
It was! I was like, the entire issue was summed up in that one speech
bubble. It's like somebody jumping from a tree and then, like, having seven paragraphs of text.
Like, he should be dead before he got three of those words out, right?
I'm always so happy to see comics that aren't afraid of words.
Yeah. But she straps him into his machine and then stabs him with her sword, but not before you actually see her imagining the Serpentor DNA strand. Apparently, that was pulled from an ad or something that I don't remember seeing. But
wasn't that like actually a scene from the cartoon, like his nightmare or something? Didn't he have like a nightmare about building Serpentor? That's where he got the idea. Am I imagining this?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact. So it's
because I want to say he like dreamed the DNA thing, and he's like, I will make our Cobra Emperor.
Apparently, it's from the toy commercial.
Oh, okay.
So you remember how the Transformers had animated toy commercials? So did G.I. Joe, and this just happened to be from one of those. But he's imagining, I love this, Caesar, Sun Tzu, Hannibal, Philip and Alexander, Attila, Osama, Montezuma, Stalin, and it basically goes through, and it's like, Dracula? Dracula? Yeah.
Your heroes stare down at you with mocking contempt. You're a joke, a jabroni, who thinks he's a scientist.
And Scarlet, as she walks away, you see the sword in his, basically in the sternum. And she says, they say when you die, your final thought lasts an eternity. And that's pretty cool. And probably my favorite part of the whole issue is as she's walking out, she confronts herself, a robot version of herself.
That's a great page, by the way.
I know.
Yeah, that jumped out so well. And you talk about Frank Miller. I got a Frank Miller vibe off of that, too.
Oh, God, yeah.
That popped up.
Oh, and the fight, too. She's confronted by herself, basically. And the fight's just one page long, and it's a series of short panels, and the panels get longer and longer and larger until the last couple. But they're fighting each other, and they're basically first once the robot Scarlet shoots the real Scarlet with her crossbow, and she cuts the arrow with her or the bolt with her sword, and then they basically go sword to sword and fist to fist, foot to foot. And the most gruesome part, though, is they each have a dagger in the face of the other, and the other is holding the dagger with their opposite hand to try to stay the hand to keep it from, like, you know, cutting them. And all you see is each of their faces are basically cut up.
Just cut up real bad, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love this so much. Yeah. It says, evenly matched in every way. You blew it. Made a copy of me when you should have made an improvement. One of us is going to bleed out before the other. All I got to do is not die. That is so Frank Miller.
Yes.
It is so awesome.
Then the cool thing is, after obviously the good Scarlet wins, and she bandages up her face in the interim between that page and this one, she finds Zarak. He's binary bonded to Scorponok, and you see her sword drawn, and you assume that she basically chops his head off.
Yeah.
And last panel is Scorponok giving Optimus Bumblebee's head back.
Yeah.
And the title of the issue, which is Headmasters.
Headmasters. I love that.
I love this so much.
It was a great issue. It really was.
I still
talking about it, I actually like it better than after. I liked it when I read it, but actually talking through it, I think I like it way better.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot easier to follow than the last episode, than the last, you know, comic book.
Frank Miller's style is a lot more slower and more deliberate than the kind of comics that Tom Scioli usually likes to, you know, homage in this. And doing a Frank Miller style issue really kind of helped him do a more focused narrative, which is, at this point, the last thing I expected from this book, which is, you know, of course, what it would have to do then. And, you know, there is no better issue to do a Frank Miller style than an issue with an evil psychiatrist, because Frank Miller hates psychiatrists.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Dr. Walper from Dark Knight Returns is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I love Dark Knight Returns. So, I love this issue. And going back, I still prefer thinking that she's crazy all the way through. And I'd like to imagine that this is basically like a flashback in Scarlet's mind as she's being, you know, getting the gas chamber in Springfield. I just want to take this issue that way.
Would it make you feel better if, like, the last page would just had two panels, one with her on Cybertron and one with her in the gas chamber? Would that have made you feel a little bit better?
It wouldn't make me feel better. It would make me think it was awesome, more awesome.
Okay.
But, like, yeah, like, if there was some sort of...
like, both of them saying it was worth it at the same time. One
yes.
On Cybertron, one where she's in the gas chamber.
Something like that. I wish it had not been so overtly... No, Scarlet's not crazy. She's the sanest person here, because I kind of hate that.
But then again, interpretations. You're interpreting that she's crazy. We didn't. Who's to say that you're not right? You know?
Because
it could be that that's the way. But, you know, the way I see it is that she knew fairly early on that it was all crap and they were just trying to get in her head. I think eventually they would have got in her head, but she, you know, she made it out.
God, I love this comic.
It was good. It was definitely a good episode.
Episode's fine. You can call it an episode. Yeah. Like I'm looking at the alt covers for this, and the alt cover that is Optimus and Soundwave, I don't exactly get, but I do love the fact that the tape, I guess it's Frenzy.
Yeah.
Or Rumble, depending on your preference. It's Overkill. I didn't even see that. It's Overkill.
Because I see his head now.
Yeah,
look at it.
Yeah, I didn't see
that too.
Yeah, I just now noticed that. It's Overkill. That the tape's out of it's the tape's been eaten and it's all hanging out from Soundwave. And Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow are fighting each other, basically holding on to it and swinging from it.
Yeah, the ninjas are fighting. That's cool.
That is pretty sweet. Okay,
I like those covers. I think those covers are probably my favorite ones. When I see those,
that's my favorite now that I see Overkill his head.
I really like the Sciolia covers, but like the alternate cover where it's kind of like cartoon Sumbo-ish looking. Those are cool. Those are fun.
I like the Sciolia cover just because it. You know, it continued the fake out that I was absolutely convinced that this issue would have nothing to do with that last page of last issue.
Yeah.
Because nothing you see on that page has anything to do with what happens in this issue.
Yeah.
And the third cover, which is by name, please, by Cody Chamberlain, I like that portrait of Starscream. I mean, The world is certainly full of portraits of Starscream, but that is one of the better ones.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything else to say about this. Other than what I really like about this book, more than anything else that I read, this challenges me to go back and reread and re-understand what it says. Most books are...
I bet you never thought you were going to get that from a G.I. Joe versus Transformers.
No. Like, too many books are... I'm trained to read it straight through. No interpretation. What you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And it's all easily digestible, and it's certainly not this book. And I think that a lot of people who don't like it don't like that it's not easily digestible.
And the style is an acquired taste. I think it helps to have grown up with rougher, weirder comic styles than we have had recently to really appreciate what this book does.
Yeah, if you'd never read comics in the 80s and you only started in the 90s, it probably would be a hard book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this clickbait, only a child of the 80s will understand these things.
Yeah. Like... Most people couldn't go back and reread something like – even something as polished as Crisis on Infinite Earths is really hard to read by 2015 standards.
Yeah. I'm trying to reread it right now because I got it on sale through Comixology, and I was like, God, this is so hard to keep up with.
And yeah. You know, Marv Wolfman's not my favorite – well, actually, no. I really do love Marv Wolfman. I forgot about his TV work, obviously.
Teen Titans?
Well, I'm not – I'm thinking Transformers. Yep. So – but like his stuff on his Crisis on Infinite Earths, it's not him. It's just the style of the time, and it's kind of hard. Mm-hmm. But like, I think really what made it click for me was that your copy of of, God, it escaped me, Mark Gruenwald.
Oh, Squadron Supreme.
Yeah, going back and reading that. Not that I couldn't read a one-off, you know, 80s comic or 70s comic, but reading 12 or what, so however many issues it is back to back to back gave me a real appreciation for comics of that style.
God, I need to read that again.
Yeah, I have a third printing of it. No ashes.
Yeah, mine's no ashes either.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about this is that it shows how much you can do in a single issue of a comic,
how much
space there actually is. And this is one of the slower issues, comparatively speaking. This is one of the ones where relatively few things happen. And it still makes better use of the space it has than just about anything else I read or have read in many years.
Hey, do you think that, like, the people that don't like his art style, this is maybe the issue they need to check out? Because, you know, his style in this, like the gritty kind of Frank Miller-esque, this maybe could be the thing that gets people to actually enjoy his art style.
Maybe.
And see his range. Because, I mean, he has range.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of people, though, and I hate to say it, but if it's not like Jim Lee, they don't care for it.
Because this is beautiful. I mean, this is like one of the nicest looking issues I've seen of this series.
I think if you were turned off by the art in the early issues, it may be worth looking at this again, because it is more focused. The art, everything that's here, it's easier to ascertain what the purpose of everything is for the story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's still busy art and it's still very rough and very personal art, but it follows much more clearly than any of the previous issues. So yeah, in that sense, you know, if you are not a fan of what the book normally does, it is probably worth it to you to check this issue out and see if nothing else, if this is an issue that you like.
I want a poster of that encounter with fake Scarlet.
I want a poster of every panel in this book.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So any thoughts about any other thoughts, guys, before we depart?
No, I think we're good.
That's good.
Okay.
Happy with this.
So that'll do it for Fanboy versus Transformers this week. Next week, what Rob, what's coming out next week?
I believe the last chapter of Combiner Wars, but I am not 100% certain on that.
Okay. So hopefully next week there'll be another episode of Fanboy versus Transformers. If not, I've been your host, Brian Kilby, with Rob, Chris, and Diecast. We'll catch you later.
Need to catch up? Visit tfradio.net/Amazon and start shopping for collected volumes of all the Transformers titles. For comic book news, reviews, and more, visit tformers.com. Fanboy vs. Transformers is a Radio Free Cybertron production.